Chapter 2, Joining Up, in which the author recounts making a choice to become a full member of a membershipless non-church, which was, however, the only correct place to present oneself Sunday morning. When I turned 12, I asked for my place at the Lord's table, and three men from our church came to visit me at my parents' house. I wanted in. It was like a Catholic being confirmed. A lot of kids waited until more like 16 to ask in, but I wanted in at 12. Some kids are let in as early as 9. So the three men came over, unofficially but very actual elders. And there had been a church meeting where they talked about me. And there would be one after they questioned me too. At my house, my parents cleared out, and the men talked about how solemn it was and what a privilege it was to partake of the emblems each and every Lord's Day morning with those who were gathered at the Lord's table. Though they called it the Lord's table, they clearly felt that it was their job as gatekeepers to deny people access to and cast people out from it, just as if it were their own table. They clearly didn't feel like this gatekeeper job belonged to or was being carried out correctly in any other Christian group. So we had to keep separate to avoid contamination from those laxer groups. They talked about how important it was that there was nothing in my young life that would make taking my place at the Lord's table dishonor the Lord. So, if I swore or fooled around with girls or drank alcohol or went to the movie theater or live concerts or shoplifted or gambled or smoked or had gotten a divorce, I needed to speak up right then or risk defiling the Lord's table and with it his people. Risk connecting his name with moral evil. They didn't actually mention any of these things by name, of course. They didn't need to. They just referred to all of that as anything in your life and expected me to know what they meant. And I did know what they meant. I could proudly say that at age 12, there was nothing in my life that was a problem. I was clean. There was nothing in my life anyway, in general. Nothing good or bad. Nothing whatsoever. It was hardly a life at all. My life was largely being piously, consciously unlived. So I was good to go. And I was allowed to take my place at the Lord's table, the gatekeepers decided. It was announced the following Lord's Day that they'd admitted me. 16 years later, other gatekeepers in a neighboring assembly I was then attending would decide that I'd dishonored the Lord by writing a parody of an outreach pamphlet of theirs, and I would from that point on be shut out of that circle. Was from that point on supposedly put away from the Lord's table. For good. I asked back in. After one meeting in which they predicted a failure to ever understand me, they refused to meet to discuss the matter ever after. As I understand the Bible verses they appended to the letter that informed me of my excommunication, Paul gave instructions for rapists and extortionists and drunks and other such mofos to be put out from among the group of Christians in the area. Turned over to Satan for the destruction of the flesh, it says. These men, however, informed me that they'd put me away not from among the group of Christians, but from the very Lord's table itself, globally, and not for rape or extortion, for satire. But I get ahead of myself. Back to the reality of suddenly being a 12-year-old full member of the memberless Plymouth Brethren non-church. Drinking alcohol was not okay outside of Lord's Day morning breaking of bread when we drank a sip of wine each, if we were members. My first time, I sat proudly up beside my parents after having sat for a couple of years in what was jokingly called Sinner's Row in the back of the room next to my grandfather. He would die without ever being a member again because he divorced his wife. There is no forgiveness for divorcing someone in the TW Brethren. My grandmother, his troubled wife, however, sat right up next to my parents because she'd not been the one to initiate the divorce, having merely been the one with the untreated lifelong emotional and mental problems which made my grandfather feel he needed to divorce her, though he still cared for her very much. So I left my grandfather in the back and went to sit back up there with my folks, feeling that I'd entered the inner circle, and I tore off a small piece from the torn-open loaf of white bakery bread that was extended on a plate to each of us, and took a small sip of the sweet, fruity communion wine. I'd never drank alcohol before, and didn't like the taste terribly much, but I liked the way it felt warm going down, as my esophagus and stomach absorbed the alcohol that communion wine is laced with. The wine was to represent both the blood of Jesus, shed for us, and also the cup of joy that was ours now that the bitter cup of judgment had been drained for us by him. I now feel that the lack of wine ever being used as a part of any kind of celebration, including weddings in brethren houses, really kind of made that whole a cup of wine is a symbol of joy and celebration in the Bible thing fall upon deaf hearts in our cases. We knew little of celebration, didn't even celebrate Christmas, Halloween, or Easter. Unlike the stricter branches of brethren, we had birthdays, though. Darlene writes,
I was not allowed to attend any Christmas concerts at school, as this was considered worldly entertainment. I would sit alone in the classroom for the time the concert was on.
After I got to sit up there Lord's Day morning and partake of the emblems, the only remaining church rites of passage left for me to aspire to were to speak up during the meetings and pass the emblems around and pray and so on. These were an option because I was male. Of course, all this wasn't normally done until one was an adult, and so I held off until I was about 20, at which time a division happened and my attendance dropped steadily off, making me feel unworthy to speak up very often anyway. I did a few things a couple of times, though. Suggested we sing a hymn, prayed. It was nerve-wracking to be driving that big ship, to be handling that whole room and directing the worship or Bible contemplation of 20 or 40 people. Pre-division, it might have been 60 or 70. And when I spoke up in Bible discussions, having gotten my degree in English literature, it only showed that I didn't see symbolism and connotation in quite the same way as the other brethren people. They seemed to me to be doing a remarkably inconsistent and arbitrary job. I seemed to them like someone saying unfamiliar foreign things, dangerous, chaotic things. What do they teach in those schools?